Okay, so I suggest that we start. I'll just introduce myself briefly. My name is Ari Shvat, and I'm the director of the archives in Beit HaRav Kook in Yerushalayim. We're the ones who print all of the cookbooks. And I grew up in Riverdale, New York, where my father was the principal of the FAR Academy. And I was active in Bnei Akiva. And I made Aliyah at the age of 17. So I hope not to put Hebrew into my English, but if there's anything that's not understandable, so just please correct me. I was a head of different girls' midrashot in Midrashet Arova and in Michlelet Orot for 20 years, and for the last 10 years, I most of the time teach in different midrashot program. Teaching religious Zionism, Rav Kook. And that is what we're going to learn tonight. In honor of Yom Ha'atzma'ut, we have the privilege this week of celebrating Yom Ha'atzma'ut. And we just celebrated Pesach. When it comes to Pesach, everybody knows what Pesach is about. That's what we spend the whole Seder talking about. Chanukah, also, everybody knows. When celebrating Yom Ha'atzma'ut, it's really important not just to focus on Herzl's Jewish state, which was that there should be a safe haven for this hated people, but as we're going to see, religious Zionism sees the importance of the state of Israel, even a secular state, from many, many different points of view. We're going to do today, and Bezrat Hashem, in the coming weeks, every issue, we're going to see the various approaches. Today, Bezrat Hashem, we'll see seven different perspectives on the religious view of a non-religious state. And being that we're celebrating, about to celebrate Yom Ha'atzma'ut, we'll start with Chanukah. What does that have to do with anything? You'll see in a minute. If I ask, what do we celebrate on Chanukah? Everybody knows that the two classic answers is we celebrate the miracle of the few defeating the many, and also the miracle of the oil lasting for 8 days. Those are the two standard answers. And Dafka, that's why it's important to always look in the Rambam, because the Rambam takes us one step deeper. First of all, he doesn't mention the miracle of the oil until later. That's mamash secondary. He does mention the war, but the Rambam goes one step deeper. Why did the Maccabees go to war? Let's see it inside. I'll go into share screening for those who don't have the sheets, or for those who do have the sheets, whatever is more convenient. Here we go. The Rambam, at the beginning of Hilchot Chanukah, tells the story of Chanukah, which is interesting because at the beginning of Hilchot Purim, he doesn't tell the story of Purim. And at the beginning of Hilchot Pesach, he does not tell the story of Pesach. But Davka, as you'll see, because there is apparently a misunderstanding regarding Chanukah, the Rambam feels it important to stress what Chanukah is about. Let's see it inside. Source number one. I brought the English sources for those who want to look at the English, but being that we will be Midayik, we're going to read in between the lines. If you can choose either one, the Hebrew is probably preferable, the original. The Rambam writes, "B'bayit sheni, during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, kishemalchei Yavan gazru gzerot al Yisrael, when the Greeks issued decrees against Israel, ubatlu datam, v'lo enichu otam lasok b'toav mitzvot, they didn't let us practice our religion. Upashtu yadam b'mamonam u'bivnotehem. They took away our money. They took away our daughters. V'nichnasu leheichal upartzu bo pratzot v'timua teharot. The Greeks broke into the Beit HaMikdash, into the Holy Temple, and defiled her. V'tzar lehem li'Yisrael me'od mipnehem. V'lachatzum lachatz gadol. The Greeks oppressed the Jews very much. Avotenu, Adam. Until the God of our forefathers, he kept his covenant to watch over us, and he saved us from the Greeks. V'gavru b'nei chashmonai ha-kohanim ha-gdolim v'aragum. And the Maccabees from the tribe of the Kohanim were victorious, and they killed the Greeks. V'oshiu Yisrael mi'adam, they saved us. V'eminu melech min ha-kohanim, and they set up a king from the Kohanim. V'chazra malchut li'Yisrael yeter al matayim shana ad ha-churban ha-sheni. And they set up a sovereign state for more than 200 years until the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. Now, if I were to ask, what does the Rambam say that we should really celebrate on Hanukkah when we say Hallel? Again, he doesn't mention Nespach HaShemen. Sorry?
Religious freedom.
He celebrates, he points out religious freedom, and that we'll get back to, but he also points out what solved the problem of religious freedom. V'emidu melech min ha-kohanim v'chazra malchut li'Yisrael yeter al matayim shana. The independent, sovereign state that returned to Israel for more than 200 years, that is what we celebrate on Hanukkah. And here we have an important precedent of the importance of having an independent state. Or in other words, if the Rambam were around today in modern Hebrew, the Rambam would probably call Hanukkah Yom Ha'atzma'ut. And as we celebrate Yom Ha'atzma'ut, and next year when we celebrate Hanukkah, these are things that we have to keep in mind. Now, we're not naive, and we know very well that, yes, most of the Jews, for sure the Orthodox Jews in the world, most of them are Zionists. Nevertheless, there are not a few Charedim and great Torah scholars who oppose the state of Israel. And this is the other side of the coin. Because, yeah, the Rambam, if he were alive today, would probably celebrate Yom Ha'atzmaut. On the other hand, you have two camps of opposition. The first camp, which is the vast majority of the Charedim, for sure more than 95%. Their problem with the state of Israel is that it's not a religious state. It's not run according to halakha. In addition to that, there is the Neturei Karta, or the Satmar Hasidim, who their opposition to the state of Israel is even if it were to be religious. Let's look together in source number two, where the Satmar Rebbe points out the nafkamina, the practical ramification of his anti-Zionism. The Satmar Rebbe, in his magnum opus, Vayol Moshe, he writes as follows, V'afim yukol chavrei memshala, even if all of the members of the Israeli government, kulam ahuvim, kulam brurim, af ketanaim v'amoraim, even if they were all to be as religious and as holy as the Tanaim and Amoraim, the Satmar Rebbe says, I don't care. Mikol makom im lokhim hamemshala v'achevut me'atzmam terem shigia hazman. If you take sovereignty, independence, before its time, according to the Satmar Rebbe, before its time is, before Mashiach comes, havi dechikat haketz shikfira b'torah kedoshah u'be'emunah. And that is, says the Satmar Rebbe, a lack of belief in God. Because what? You don't believe in Mashiach? You don't believe that God is going to save the Jewish people? Now, the nafkamina, everybody knows today in Israel that there are a lot of practical ramifications between these two groups. For example, over the last 2 years, we've had, four elections? And elections in Israel, the Haredi as a whole, they have the highest rate of voting of any group. And the reason is they close the yeshivas and the Roshei Yeshivot and the Hasidic Rebbeim say everybody is to go out to vote Gimel, or the Sfaradim, they vote Shas, and they see it as a mitzvah so that the religious parties will have that much more clout in the coalition. On the other hand, the Neturei Karta, as we just saw in the Satmar Rebbe, they don't participate in the elections. To a certain extent, they're more extreme, but they're more consistent. Because the Neturei Karta, that small minority of the Haredim, they don't want to take anything from the state of Israel, and they don't want to give anything to the state of Israel. As a matter of principle, they don't want to pay taxes. They don't vote in the elections. Indirectly, they do obviously benefit from security, from electricity, from the mikvahs, from the eruvin, but they say that they are very consistent. We don't want to give to the state, and we don't want to take from the state. On the other hand, Agudat Yisrael is less extreme. They do vote in the elections. They do receive all the stipends for Torah study, for children, Bituach Leumi, but most of them do not serve in the army. And a lot of them do not pay taxes. And these are the two different groups. Again, the vast majority are not so extreme. By the way, I should point out that when was the split? Originally, all of Agudat Yisrael were Neturei Karta. If you look at the original decisions of the Agudot Yisrael conventions, the first convention, I think it was in Katowice, they took the party line of Neturei Karta, that you're not allowed to have any kind of independent Jewish concept before the coming of the Mashiach. That's Neturei Karta. When did they split? At the beginning of the Holocaust. In the early 30s, where they saw that there is no choice but to have a Jewish state with a Jewish army, to open the gates to Aliyah, almost all of the Haredim left the Neturei Karta. And by the way, within the Neturei Karta themselves, they look down on the most Haredim, the Agudat Yisrael and Shas. They say that they're inconsistent and they're Zionists, and because they take from the state where it is good for the religion. But if the state is not good for the religion, if it's secular, that is when they leave the state. To summarize what we've seen till now, on the one hand, the Rambam stresses the importance of having a Jewish state, and that's what we celebrate on Hanukkah, that sovereignty returned to Israel for 200 years. On the other hand, there are two serious problems with the modern state of Israel. A, it's secular. B, we're supposed to wait, according to some sources, for Mashiach ben David. Here you see the greatness of the Rambam. Anybody who learned with Rav Soloveitchik or in Yeshivat Har Etzion knows that you have to learn the Rambam with a magnifying glass. Maimonides was a genius. And just like here, so too in many, many places. I give a course on the Rambam in one of the colleges where I teach. The Rambam, ironically, deals with a lot of questions that will only arise 800 years after his time. Let's again look in the Rambam, and we'll see if anybody noticed, the Rambam is sort of extraneous. When he wants to stress something in between the lines, he either mentions something a couple of times so that you shouldn't miss it. Sometimes he mentions totally trivial points, which apparently are not trivial. Again, let's again look in source number one in the Rambam. Towards the end, the Rambam, maybe somebody will pick it up. The Rambam says, when he summarizes why the Maccabees went to war, he says, "V'gavru bnei chashmonai ha-kohanim ha-gdolim v'haragum." And the Maccabees from the Kohanic family were victorious. "V'oshiu Yisrael mi'adam," and they saved us from the Greeks. "V'emidu melech min ha-kohanim," and they set up a king from the Kohanim. Now, the Rambam goes out of his way to stress twice. Within seven words, the Rambam stresses that the Maccabees were Kohanim, and they set up a kingdom from the Kohanim. In case you missed it the first time, why do I need to know that the Maccabees were Kohanim? And why is it significant that they set up a kingdom from the Kohanim? Anybody catch it?
Yeah, you know, king. Kohen is not supposed to be a king.
According to the Rambam, it's an Isur D'oraita. According to the Rambam, the Maccabees transgressed on one of the 613 mitzvot when they made themselves kings. Let's see it inside in source number four. In source number 4, I brought for you from the Rambam, from Sefer HaMitzvot, where the Rambam, towards the end of his counting of the mitzvot, source number 4, mitzvah shin samach bet, 362 out of 365, the Rambam says, on the pasuk, lo tuchal latet alecha ish nochri, you're not allowed to have a foreigner as king. Now, why would we think of having a Gentile as king? The Rambam broadens the definition of Gentile, of a foreigner, and he says that it's referring to somebody who is not from the anointed tribe of Yehuda. Omnam amalchut levan kvar yadata misifrei hanevuah shezacha ba David, v'chein zaru acharav, excuse me, ad sof kol adorot, ein melech lemish yamin torat Moshe adon kol hanevim, ela mizera shlomo levad. The Rambam is clearly getting excited. You cannot have a king from any other tribe. And anybody who believes in the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu and any of the prophets, you have to only have a king from the tribe of Yehudah and the family, the Davidson or Davidowitz or Davidian family. V'chol mishu mezulat ze'azer anichbad linyam malchut nochri karina bay. So, for example, the Maccabees who were Kohanim, they are considered foreigners if they want to be king. Once the Rambam says, there is no doubt about it, this is very clear, that's a sign that he is corresponding with somebody. And the Rambam here is corresponding with the Maccabean dynasty. The Rambam goes out of his, what did he say in the last line? He says, just like David HaMelech, or the Mashiach, is not allowed to bring a sacrifice in the Holy Temple because he's a king, he's from Judah, and he's not a Kohen from Shevet Levi, so too vice versa. If you are a Maccabee and you are a Kohen, you are not allowed to be a king. The Rambam stresses, nevertheless, we celebrate Yom HaTzma'ut. The Rambam is not naive. He realizes that there is a problem with the Maccabean dynasty. And nevertheless, it's so important to have this sovereign Jewish state that we celebrate Hanukkah, even though it's not the ideal Jewish state. But the Rambam isn't finished. Did you notice that the Rambam, he also pointed out, V'chazra malchut liYisrael yeter al 200 shana. Sovereignty returned to Israel for more than 200 years. Here also, anybody who's familiar with the Rambam's style knows that the Rambam does not go into trivial historic facts. If the Rambam wanted to say the Maccabean dynasty lasted a long time, let him say it lasted a long time. If he wants to say that it ended, say it ended. If he wants to say it was short, say it was short. But why does he have to go into that trivial detail, the Maccabean dynasty lasted for more than 200 years? Here we have to go to history books. Because if you know anything, you know what? Even if you don't know anything about the Maccabean dynasty, just let's look at their names. I'm not talking about the sons of Matityahu, but the grandchildren of Yehudah Maccabee. Their names are Aristobulus, Hyrcanus, Alexander Yanai, Hordus, Antipatrus. By the way, the Rambam is taking this straight from the Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah, which tells us that the Maccabean dynasty lasted 206 years, 103 years of the sons of Matityahu and their descendants, and 103 years Herod's house. Now, without getting into the question, was Herod Jewish? Was his father Jewish? Were his children Jewish? There are a lot of big question marks there. But notice, the Rambam celebrates even 103 years of the Herodian dynasty. The Rambam goes out of his way. He doesn't just say we celebrate the first 40 years where the Maccabean dynasty was religious. He says we celebrate all 200 years, even though he knows that for most of the 200 years, the Maccabean dynasty was not religious. And just in case you want to say, well, he was a rabbi, he wasn't a historian, Let's look in the Rambam, where I brought for you in source number 3. The Rambam knows exactly what the Hasmonean dynasty was like. The Rambam in Perush HaMishnayot, Masechet Yoma, we don't have time to go into what the context is here, but he says, Avo b'migdash sheni, during the time of the Second Temple, Shayu bo kol inyanim biltim ushlamim kamo sheyadata. Like, you know, like everybody knows, it's common knowledge that everything was not proper. The Milachim, the kings, the Maccabean dynasty, lo hayu holchim lefi amasorat hayishara. They did not follow Jewish tradition. They were not religious. They were Hellenists. Again, look at their names. Now, I notice from some of your faces that you caught where I'm going. The Rambam is pointing out that the two problems that we have today, 800 years later, with the secular state of Israel, the Rambam already told us 800 years ago that we have a precedent how to relate to a secular state. If your complaint is that we're supposed to wait for Mashiach ben David, you know what? The Maccabees were not from the house of David either. And if your complaint against the state of Israel is that it's not as religious as we would like, well, you know what? The Maccabean dynasty also was not as religious as we like. And we don't just celebrate the first 40 religious years. We celebrate all 200 years, even though for most of the time, they were Hellenists. To summarize what we've seen till now, somebody who doesn't want to celebrate this week, Yom HaAtzmaut, Israeli Independence Day, if you don't want to celebrate it, you should not be celebrating Chanukah either. Because the Rambam is pointing out that the problems that we have today, they were the same problems, and very often history repeats itself. Shalom, Debbie Sondheim.
Hi.
We'll say hello afterwards. The question is why? Why is it so important to have a Jewish independent state, even if it's not the ideal Jewish state? That's the question on the Rambam. And it's also our question on Yom HaAtzmaut. The Rambam here also already answered the question. I won't go jumping back to short. You know what? It's a pain. I'll just do it again because we already read the Rambam. It's the same Rambam that we saw in Source 1. The Rambam, when he tells the story of why the Maccabees went to war, Bibayit Sheni, Kishemalchei Avan Gazrug Zerot al Yisrael, when the Greeks issued decrees, evil decrees against the Jews, like one of the participants pointed out, the problem was when we don't have a Jewish state, we do not have freedom of religion. Now, when I teach students today, their first reaction is, but we don't need freedom of religion in a Jewish state. Every place has freedom of religion. People, even my age, we all remember the Soviet Union. In the Soviet Union, which was a modern superpower, it wasn't the Dark Ages. Nevertheless, they were dark. They did not allow Jews to put mezuzot on their door, to do brit milah, to observe the Shabbat. And if so, we need a Jewish state to ensure religious freedom. On the other hand, it is a question, because today, even in the former Soviet Union, there is freedom of religion. So maybe today this point doesn't apply anymore. That's why I brought another Rambam in source number, let's see it, open the share screen. Let's look in the Rambam in source number 6. The Rambam in source number 6, by the way, if I ever forget to scroll down, somebody remind me, please. I have a tendency to forget that.
If you could send us the source link, that would be also very good. We don't have the source link.
The source link I sent in the chat. It's not there?
Rabbi, it's there, but it opens to the Zoom, not to the sources.
Okay. Tov, so, you know what? If somebody really wants to, you can call Jay Kelman or call his wife. Does anybody want to volunteer? I don't want to stop the class in the middle. Does anybody want to volunteer and call his wife and ask her to put up the send out the source sheet? Any volunteers? Okay.
So I guess I'll email them.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. So we are in source number 6. So in the meantime, yeah, we'll just all look together for those who don't have it. The Rambam is writing in one of his letters as follows. Afilu hayushtei medinot miYisrael. Even if there were two states of Israel, we know historically that at one point there was the state of Judea and the state of Israel. There were two Jewish states. The Rambam says, say there are in your time two Jewish states. Achat mehen yotir tova b'maaseh v'min agutea, v'yotir medagdeket v'nichnat l'mitzvot mina acheret. And one of the Jewish states is more Jewish than the other. Shechayav yirei Hashem latzit me'ota shemaaseh inam kol kach nechonim le'ota medina tova. The Rambam says, even if there are two Jewish states, you have an obligation to live in that which is more conducive to having a Jewish atmosphere. Aval imaya makom min agoyim. But if a person is living in a non-Jewish state, Yisrael omed sham al achat kama v'kama kal v'chomer, how much more so? Shu chayav latzeit me'oto makom v'lalechet l'makom tov. A person, says the Rambam, notice, the Rambam does not mention here the land of Israel. As far as this Rambam is concerned, that Jewish state could be in Uganda. And if there was to be a Jewish state in Uganda, all of the Jews should move there. Why? Because a Jew, everyone, every person is influenced by his surroundings. Even the strongest person is influenced by his surroundings. The Rambam that we're talking about in Hilchot Deyot, the Rambam writes, every person's influenced by his surroundings, but you have free will to choose where you want to live, who is going to influence you. And here, that gets interesting. There was another time in Jewish history where there was an independent Jewish state in the land of the Khazars. And one of the sources, how do we know about the Khuzarim? The story of the Khazars happened about the year 750 CE, where the king of the Khazars was looking for a monotheistic religion. And as everybody knows the story, he invited a Christian priest, an Aristotelian philosopher, a Muslim Qadi. And in the end, he's not convinced and he invites a Jew, and he and his people convert to Judaism. Rav Chasdai ibn Shifrut. Those who know Yerushalayim know that there's a famous street named after him, one of the great rabbis of Spain. He heard about this state of the Khazars, and he writes in a letter to the king of the Khazars, V'ilu yadati, source number 7, if I were to know that it's true, that there is this Jewish state in the land of the Khazars, hayiti mo'ez b'chvodi v'ozev gedulati, Rav Chasdai ibn Shifrut was a minister in the Spanish kingdom. He said, I would leave all of my honor. V'ayiti olech mi har el giva bayam u'bayabasha. I would do anything. Ad bo'iel makom asher adoni amelech, in order to get there to that Jewish state. Why do I mention this? Because the Rambam that we saw in Hilchot Chanukah said that the Maccabees were fighting for freedom of religion. Today, there's freedom of religion everywhere, but we have the opposite problem. What happens when there's too much freedom of religion? Assimilation. And that is the problem wherever Jews live today. And this is, to a certain extent, the opposite reason, but the more applicable reason why we need a Jewish state and why we celebrate a Jewish state. Because even if a Jewish state is not religious, the culture, the atmosphere is Jewish. I remember when I came to Israel, I couldn't believe that on the buses before Pesach, all of the advertisements are advertising what new oven to buy for Pesach, what are the best cleaning agents before Shavuot. All the cheese companies go bananas before Sukkot. How to buy your Sukkot and your four species. And that's on the radio, that's on the television, that's in the army, that's in... The culture here is Jewish. Even if we would like it to be more Jewish, as a matter of fact, I work with students from Chutz La'aretz, as I mentioned, and it hit me out just not too many years ago that assimilation in the context of a Jewish state is good. Right? We always grew up thinking that assimilation is a bad word because in 99% of the world, assimilation is a problem. But in the context of a Jewish state, you have Jews coming from the Ukraine, from Venezuela, from Russia, from who knows what countries, who knows what they were eating. They come to the land of Israel and all of a sudden they start celebrating the Jewish holidays and eating Jewish foods and not working on the Jewish holidays. And their children have Brit Milah. They put up mezuzot on their door simply because that is, and that's what the Rambam noticed. The Rambam doesn't talk about it's good to live in a Jewish community. The Rambam is talking about the importance of living in a Jewish state. And that is the first point why it's important to celebrate also Hanukkah and also Yom HaAtzmaut. The Rambam, though, continues. The Rambam, back in source number one, also mentions another problem, why the Maccabees went to war to fight for sovereignty. Pashtu yadam b'mamonam u'bivnoteihem. The Greeks took away our money. They took away our daughters. What we call in English, anti-Semitism. Right? We just commemorated a Yom HaShoah, and we all saw the price of anti-Semitism. I just told my students yesterday that on Yom HaZikaron, we commemorate 26,000 soldiers and victims of terrorism starting from 1882. That's when they count it. 140 years, 26,000 tragedies. And each one of them is a real tragedy. But if you put that in context, all of the wars in Israel, all the terrorism put together in 140 years is less than 1 week in Auschwitz. Less than 1 week in one death camp. And as I told my students, Yom HaZikaron is the price that we pay for having a Jewish state. Yom HaShoah is the price that we paid for not having a Jewish state. And that is why almost all the Haredim split with the Neturei Karta and they joined the Zionist movement to this extent or the other, because they realized that having a Jewish state is the only way to combat anti-Semitism. Now, another thing that I have to stress, and again, today, the older people here for sure know it. Those who know history, I'm sure know it. But younger people today don't realize what the world was like when the gates of Zion were closed. Can you imagine if there was a state of Israel during the Holocaust with open gates and all those Jews could have come to Eretz Yisrael, just like when the Soviet Union crumbled and 1.2 million Jews came to Israel. And now they're expecting now 30,000 Jews a year from France to come to Israel. And when the Jews from Ethiopia needed, they came to Israel. And whoever wants and needs to come, even if you don't make Aliyah today, but everybody knows in the back of their mind, if chas v'shalom, it's not good for the Jews. For example, today in Venezuela, I have students from Venezuela. They come to Israel. They stay in Israel. It's not good to go back. Today, every Jew has where to come. And that's the other aspect of anti-Semitism. To summarize what we've seen till now, the Rambam stresses there were two major problems. Let's talk in the present contemporary Israel, why we support the secular state of Israel, even if it's not as religious as we would like. Number one, it combats assimilation. And number two, it combats anti-Semitism, right? Even if somebody in Israel decides to take off their kippah or their son doesn't want to be religious, Elisa's going to marry a Jew. Elisa's grandchildren are going to have Brit Milah. And all probability is going to continue lighting Nerot Chanukah and fasting on Yom Kippur simply because that's what Israelis do. By the way, there are interesting statistics that look at the Soviet Jews since they've been here, right? The big Aliyah was in 1990. Since then, and they found that Soviet Jews basically have adopted the Israeli society, whereas a certain percentage are totally religious. The vast majority are traditional to a certain extent. They all do Brit Milah. They all give, almost all of them give Jewish names, mezuzot on their door, celebrate the holidays. There's just a very small minority that continue in the old form of assimilation, and they don't assimilate into the good form of assimilation into the state of Israel. Until now, that Jewish state could be in Uganda. Here, we're going to add a third point. Let's look together in the Ramban, in source number 8, the famous Ramban. In his additions to the Sefer LeMitzvot, the Ramban, source number 8, Mitzvah 4, he brings the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah to live in the land of Israel. What does that have to do with our topic? Our topic today is the state of Israel, not the land of Israel. Notice, a lot of anti-Zionists live in the land of Israel, in Bnei Brak, in Mea She'arim. But our topic today is the state of Israel. So what does that have to do with this mitzvah? Let's see inside. The Ramban writes, source 8, שנצטווינו לרשת הארץ אשר נתן האל יתברך ויתעלה לאבותינו לאברהם ליצחק וליעקב. We were commanded to inherit the land of Israel that Hashem promised to our forefathers. As a kid, I always wanted to know why there are only three forefathers. There are four mothers, but only three forefathers. ולא נעזבה ביד זולתנו מן האומות או לשממה. We are not allowed to leave the land of Israel in the hands of foreign nations or barren. Vehu amro lahem, this is the mitzvah Bamidbar, chapter 33, pasuk 53, vo'ashtem et ha'aretz v'shavtem ba. That Hashem commanded us to inherit and to develop and settle the land of Israel. What does this have to do with the Jewish state? To inherit the land of Israel is to have Jewish rule in the land of...
You told out that Splenda was coming fast. You told out that Splenda was coming fast.
I'm sorry? Somebody should mute their microphone. We can have questions at the end if you want. Bekitzur, if the goal of the Jewish state is to fight assimilation and to fight anti-Semitism, then we could have that Jewish state in Uganda. Here, point number 3, the Ramban is pointing out, no, there is a positive aspect, a positive mitzvah, just like there is a mitzvah to bench after you eat bread or to shake a lulav and etrog on the holiday of Sukkot. There is a positive mitzvah to own the land of Israel. Velo na'azva biyad zulatenu min ha'omot. We're not allowed to leave the land of Israel in the hands of foreign nations, in other words, to have a Jewish state. That's point number 3. Point number 4, totally different direction. And this could be a shiur in unto itself. Let's look in source number 9. I like this source because it's a nafkamina. It's a practical ramification. A lot of times people say, you know, you have your philosophy, Lubavitch has their philosophy, Satmar, everyone has their philosophy. But halacha, everybody agrees. Interesting halacha. In the Shulchan Aruch, Aruch Chaim, source number 9, Siman, Tavkuf Samachalit, Harue Are Yehuda Bechur Banan. Whoever sees the cities of Judea in destruction, Omer, he has to recite, Are Kodshecha Ayu Midbar. Your holy cities have become deserted, desolate. Korea, and he tears his clothing as a sign of mourning. Now, the question is, if you want to observe this mitzvah of the Shulchan Aruch, How do you define the word bichurbana? Does it mean desolation? Does it mean deserted? And whatever it means, when do we have to stop doing Kriya? For example, today, when you land at the Ben-Gurion Airport, I don't know anybody who does Kriya. According to Shulchan Aruch, you would have to do Kriya. When you visit, let's not talk about Har HaBayit, because on Har HaBayit, Rav Moshe Feinstein says you still have to do Kriya. Maybe we'll talk about that in a minute. But on the rest of the cities of Judea, nobody does Kriya. Why? The Mishnah Brura explains. The Mishnah Brura right away in Source 10, it's not his Chidush, Mishnah Brura is quoting the Achronim. What is the definition of Bechor Banan? Afilu Yoshvin Ben Yisrael. Even if there are Jews living in the land of Israel, Kevan Shayishma Elim Moshlim Aleim, as long as the Arabs rule, as long as there's foreign rule, Mikri Bechor Banan. We are in a status of Hurban, and you have to tear your clothing. In other words, on what date exactly did Jewish tourists stop doing Kriya when they landed on the boat or they came by airplane? It was Hei Iyar Tavshin Chet. When Israel declared sovereignty, we are no longer in Hurban. We are Adarabah. We are in the Geula process. When Chazal talk about Yemot HaMashiach means the days of Mashiach. And anybody who learned the sources knows the Gemara Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Bet, goes into depth of the different stages. It's a long and slow process where Mr. Mashiach is the last stage. Coming back to the land of Israel and developing the land of Israel and setting up a Sanhedrin and then building the Beit HaMikdash. And afterwards, Mashiach ben David is supposed to come. But having a sovereign state is a significant stage in the Geula process. And if that's not clear enough, again, it's a nafkamina. It's halachic ramification. If you ever come across somebody who doesn't celebrate Yom HaTzma'ut, ask him if he tears Kriya when he comes into Israel. Or where, by the way, those who do Kriya when they visit the Kotel, that's the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein, who says that regarding Har HaBayit, it's not enough just to have Jewish rule, Jewish policemen, Mishmar HaGvul, but yet if you don't have the Beit HaMikdash, you still have to do Kriya. Notice the Mishnah Brura does not differentiate. The Mishnah Brura says you don't have to do Kriya, even when you go to Har HaBayit, even when you go to the Kotel, you just don't have to do Kriya. Why? Because today we have a Jewish state. Wherever, the only place where you might have to do Kriya is if you see Gush Katif, which was given to foreign rule. But wherever you go in the state of Israel today, because we have a Jewish state, we are no longer in the process of desolation. We are adrabah in the process of redemption. The Rambam in Source 11, seen a lot of Rambam today, but it's always good. The Rambam in Source 11 in Hilchot Tshuva tells us exactly what is the definition of redemption. Yemot HaMashiach, again, the days of Mashiach. It's not one day, but it's a period. Yemot HaMashiach hu ha'olam hazeh. Bo'olam k'minhago holeich. Famous Rambam. He says the world is not going to change. The laws of gravity are not going to change in Yemot HaMashiach. Everything's going to stay the same in Yemot HaMashiach, except one thing. Ela shamalchut tachzor liYisrael. Sovereignty will return to Israel. Ukvar amru chachamim arishonim. Here the Rambam is quoting his source in Masechet Shabbat. Ein ben olam hazeh liYemot HaMashiach, ela shibud malchuyot bilvad. The only difference between Galut and Yemot HaMashiach is sovereign Jewish rule. Now, if somebody says, well, Malchut infers that we have a king, it's talking about the Mashiach. That's what the Satmar Rebbe would say here. But what would he say in the Rambam in Hilchot Tshuva, Perek Chet, Halacha Zayin, where the Rambam says, Shetashuv HaMemshala LiYisrael. That sovereignty, rule, does not have to be a kingdom, does not have to be Mashiach. Adrabah. the idea of having sovereign rule, as we saw before, to ensure freedom of religion, to give us peace of mind, etc., etc. So this is point number four, why we need a Jewish state. Even if it's secular, it is part of the Geula process. Point number five. Let us go down to Yechezkel. Lamed Vav, source 14. Maybe I'll just give a drop of background about what is going on in Yechezkel. The Nevi'im have been ranting and raving for several hundred years that if Am Yisrael doesn't do tshuva, God is going to send us to exile. And if we don't improve ourselves, God is going to send us to exile. And one after the other, they keep warning us God is going to send us to exile. Now, anyone who has children knows that if you warn over and over and over again, and you never carry out your threat, the kids don't take you seriously anymore. And they said to Yirmiyahu in his face, God's just bluffing. It always reminds me of, you know, anybody know the scenario where the family's driving on the highway and the kids are making a lot of noise? And some of you may have known my father. You can imagine him turning around and saying, if you don't shut up, I'm going to let you out here in the middle of the highway. Now, he doesn't mean to let me out in the middle of the highway. Is a threat that's not meant to be carried out. The problem is, if he were to say it 10, 15, 20 times over a period of 200 years, nobody would take him seriously anymore. And basically, Yirmiyahu tells us that we leave God no choice because we're not repenting. So he's going to have to carry out his threat, that threat that he didn't want to send. He didn't want to send us to exile. Why does he not want to send us to exile? Yechezkel tells us here in Perek Lamed Vav. Sorry, let me go to the share screen. We are at source number 14. Vayavo el goyim asher ba'osham. Yechezkel is telling us, yes, God is going to carry out his threat. And he's going to send you to exile. And this time it's for real. Vayavo el goyim asher ba'osham. Vayichalulu etchem kodshi. We will be exiled and we will desecrate the name of God. Be'emor lahem, because the goyim will tell us, Am Adonai ele. This is God's nation, and God couldn't protect his people. What kind of God is that? He must not be a very potent God. The God of the Babylonians is obviously stronger than the God of Israel. And the Romans said it also. Aye Hashem Elokechem, Jew, where's your God? Let's look in Rashi in source 15 at the bottom. Omrim Hashavain, those who take the Jews captive. Hare Elu Am Hashem, this is God's chosen people. Below Hayalo Yacholet Latzilan, and God could not save them. Vayechalulu et Shem Kodshi, this is a Chilul Hashem. Hishpilu et Kvodi, Umau Chilul, Behemore Veim Aleihem, Am Hashem Ele, Omer Etzo Yatzau, Below Hayecholu Biado, Latzil et Amo, Vet Arzo. Or in modern English, the greatest Chilul Hashem in Jewish history was the question, where was God in the Holocaust? Where not only did the Germans mock the Jews, hey Jew, where's your God? A lot of Jews even started asking, hey, where is our God? And God says that is a terrible Chilul Hashem, because it's as if God couldn't save his people. And God is holding back for 2,000 years. He's waiting for us to do tshuva, and we're not doing it. So in the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us he can't take it anymore. And he's going to bring us back to the land of Israel, not because we deserve it. Let's go back to Yechezkel, where he continues. Again. Va'echmol al shem kodshi, asher chilulu beit Yisrael bagoyim asher ba'osham. Yechezkel Ezekiel says again that God cannot stand this terrible Chilul Hashem, where the goyim are mocking the Jewish God. Hey, where's the God of Israel? Lachein emor lebeit Yisrael ko amar Hashem Elokim. The day is going to come, God says, lo lema'anchem ani oseh beit Yisrael. I am going to bring you back to the land of Israel, not because you deserve it. Lo lema'anchem, not because, what's happening in this scenario? I remember my father, Zichrono Livracha, again, some of you remember my father. When I used to act up, I was a middle child, and I used to crave attention. And I used to start out with my older brothers or my younger sisters, and my father would give me one warning, two warnings. Usually it was the third or fourth warning. One more time, you're going to your room. And somewhere along the line, he was a Jewish educator. He had to carry out his threat. And he sent me to my room. And the line was always that I can come back to the table if I am willing to act nicely. And somewhere along towards the end of the Shabbos meal, my mother, who really nice person, she was the nice cop. She would come and say, if you're willing to apologize, you can come back to the table. But what happens if a child sent to exile and is not willing to apologize? Is that the parents are going to leave him in exile till his bar mitzvah? They're going to make his wedding in his room? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I have to bring you back home, not because you have repented, but for my sake. Hashem says, "Lo l'manchem ani oseh kin l'shem kodshi asher chilaltem bagoyim asher batim sham, v'kidashti et shmi hagadol ha'mechulal bagoyim asher chilaltem betocham." And I am going to make a kiddush Hashem to fix the chilul Hashem. I am going to hallow the name of God in place of the chilul Hashem of 2,000 years of exile and a terrible pogrom and Holocaust. V'yedu agoyim, that the goyim should know that God is alive and well and living. What is the Kiddush Hashem? God is going to bring us back from the exile, from the nations. In other words, this is point number five. Why is the state of Israel so important? Even if it's secular to us religious Jews, because 3 years after the Holocaust, it put a stop to the Chilul Hashem. Where even if we don't yet have the understanding of why there was a Holocaust, if the question is, are we still the chosen people? And if the question is the God of Israel still alive? The answer is yes. And those who didn't know it in 45 knew it in 48. And those who didn't know it in 48 saw it in 67. And those who didn't see it in 67, they saw it in the Yom Kippur War in 73. And that is the Kiddush Hashem to end the Chilul Hashem of Galut. Point number six, and we're running out of time, so we have two more points. Shift into high gear. Source number 20. Rav Kook writes in Malachi Deot B'Yisrael, that's in his magnum opus of Orot. Source number 20. Orot, page 104. Bereshit mata'o shel ha'am hazeh, asher yada likro b'shem ha'rayon Elohi ha'barur v'ha'tahor. At the beginning of the planting of this nation of Israel, in the time of Avram Avinu, a nation that knew pure monotheism, no trinity, one pure God. Be'eta shilton ha'kabir shel eliyut b'tumata pra'uta. Even with all of the wildness of paganism, God revealed his desire to have a great nation to go in the ways of God of justice and righteousness. Now here, we have to quickly understand, it's a big idea, but we'll concentrate it. Rav Kook refers to paganism as wild. Paganism was immoral. And in paganism, the more religious a person was, the more immoral he was. Human sacrifices, sacrificing your own son. In paganism, the gods, you know what? Just think about it. As soon as there are two gods, inevitably they're going to be fighting. That's what Greek mythology is about. Now, if the gods are always fighting with each other, there's a klal imitatio dei. In religions, we imitate God. So if the gods are violent in paganism, the people can also justify being violent. On the other hand, if there is one God, one of his names is Shalom, because nobody can fight with God. You know that? Halacha, you're not allowed to say Shalom in the bathroom because it's one of the names of God. That is our imitatio Dei. We imitate a God who sees peace as an ideal. In paganism, the gods are limited. Every god by definition has his turf, but is lacking other things. The god of beauty is lacking strength. The god of strength is lacking beauty, right? And that's why they're always fighting with each other. Now, if you're a god and you are lacking, what are you going to do about it? You're going to take. And that's how primitive man explained, anthropologists explained, where did primitive man get this idea of sacrifices? Because if chas v'shalom, a person's son or daughter, drown in the ocean, primitive man would say there is this power, they called him Poseidon, right, who saw this strong young boy or this beautiful young girl and took them because they have needs. So man, who doesn't like feeling impotent, wants to do something about it. So he says to the gods, here, take a bribe, take this bull and leave my children alone. In other words, in paganism, the gods are takers. The gods are not nice. Imitatio Dei, in paganism, the people also are not nice. And they have gods who are not nice. The other hand, in monotheism, God, by definition, even if you don't believe in a monotheistic God, but if there is a monotheistic God, he is perfect. And if he's perfect, he doesn't lack anything. And if he doesn't lack anything, so what does he do all day? He doesn't take because he doesn't need anything. So what does he do all day? He is a giver. And imitatio Dei, that's why we have to be givers. In other words, what Rav Kook is saying is that together with monotheism, the Jewish people, Am Yisrael, brought morality to the world. Or in other words, only after you had the first five commandments of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, no more Avodah Zarah, but God give the second five commandments of thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. And what Rav Kook is doing beautifully, never in my Jewish education in high school, did anybody ever point out, what's the connection between mitzvot ben adam l'chavero and ben adam l'makom? Half the Torah is between man and God, the other half is between man and his fellow man, but what's the connection between the two? Rav Kook is telling us that paganism was a terrible world. Monotheism brought morality to the world. That is the greatest gift of Am Yisrael. Okay, but why do we need a state? Why did Hashem tell Avram Avinu to teach tzedek u'mishpat, teach justice to the world through lech lecha mi'artzecha, leave your country, v'eschal legoy gadol, come to the land of Israel, I will make you into a great nation. Why do you need a nation? Why do we need a national language? Why do we need a national army? Why do we need a national land? Why is Judaism also a nationality? We could just be a religion. Continues Rav Kook beautifully in paragraph Gimel. Limlu'a shel she'ifazu, in order to fulfill this goal, tzarich davka, if we, the Jewish people, our goal is to be a light to the nations and to teach monotheism and morality to the world, Tzarich davka, we need davka, precisely, shetzibur ze yebal medina politit v'sociali v'chisei mamlacha l'umit b'rom hatarbut ha'enoshit. Am chacham v'navon v'goy gadol. It has to be a great nation with politics, with culture. Religions don't participate in the Eurovision music contest. Religions don't have cultures. Nations do. Why is that so important? Rav Kook explains, he elaborates in source 21. Oz, Rav Kook is talking about Kibbutz Galiot. What is the ingathering of the exiles about? Can you imagine, I'll just say it in my words, because we're running out of time. Can you imagine bringing all of the Jewish doctors in the world into one country? bring all of the Jewish movie producers, all the Spielbergs and Goldwyn Mayer and Warner Brothers and Coen Brothers, bring all of them into one country. What would happen if we would bring all of the Jewish musicians, all the Simons and Garfunkels and Bob Dylans, all into one country? If we were to bring all of the Jewish Nobel Prize winners, Jews have won 22% of the Nobel Prizes, but instead of winning them for America and Canada and Italy and Austria and South Africa, all of those Nobel Prize winners will be in the land of Israel. Rav Kook is telling us it's not going to be difficult to influence the world. Just like today, the entire world copies American culture because they're the superpower and is watching American movies and is wearing American fashions and listening to American music. Kibbutz Galuyot, Rav Kook is just putting one and one together. Kibbutz Galuyot is underway. By the way, statistically, today, apparently, most of the Jews in the world are living in the land of Israel. That's a given. Given number two, the Jews have a disproportionate amount of cultural influence on the world. Rav Kook is putting one and one together, that Israel, the state of Israel, is going to be a cultural superpower, where the world is going to be listening to our music and watching our movies. Just an example, most of the people here probably remember Schindler's List. I remember when they said the movie, Steven Spielberg's Schindler's List, does more to educate the world about the Holocaust than all of the documentaries and museums put together. Because the average Gentile in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, he's not going to go to a Holocaust museum and doesn't watch educational television. But he does go to a Spielberg movie. And that, says Rav Kook, is how we need to be a state with moral army. Today, the Israeli army is the first army in the world to set up field hospitals wherever there's a tsunami, wherever there's an earthquake. Israel has the highest rate of volunteering in the world. Israel, this I just saw this week, Israel has the highest rate of altruistic kidney donors in the world, double any other country. And by the way, 98% are religious Zionists. And that altruism, that is, brings us to the final point. And this I will do in less than a minute. Rav Kook mentions in source 22, 23, I'll just do it Baal Peh, student Rav Karlap. Zionism teaches us altruism. I'll finish with a story. I remember we had two students over from Midrashet Arova for Shabbat. And one of them asked my oldest son, Netanel, he was 10, what do you want to be when you grow up? So a kid in Israel thinks he's asking you, what do you want to do in the army? That's like growing up. So he says, I want to be a paratrooper. So my younger daughter, Ashira, says, what's a paratrooper? Sanchan. So Netanel explains, they're very brave and they jump from airplanes. And even though the enemy is firing at them. So my daughter says, I don't want you to be a paratrooper. That sounds dangerous. And my 10-year-old son blew away our two guests when he said, yeah, it's dangerous. But if we're not willing to give our lives, we're not going to have a state. For a child growing up in the state of Israel, it's not a question, am I willing to give my life for the Jewish people? It's a question, am I going to do it in the paratroopers or in the Air Force or in the tanks? Or am I going to do 1 year of Shirut Lumi or 2 years of Shirut Lumi? But the concept of when they see every single time I drive to Yerushalayim from Kochav HaShachar, I stop and pick up every single hitchhiker. They're my brothers. How can I leave these teenagers stranded in the middle of nowhere? When you're living in a Jewish state, you are living altruism. And this week, we're not only just commemorating Yom HaAtzmaut, we're also commemorating Yom HaZikaron. I have a picture here. Some of you may recognize Roe Klein. Roe Klein, a yeshiva boy from Eli, is the god, the idol of children growing up in the state of Israel. He was in a room in Lebanon where a terrorist threw a hand grenade inside, and it was rolling around, and there was no time to pick it up and throw it out the window. And Roei Klein recited Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, as he jumped on the hand grenade, altruistically absorbing all of the shrapnel in his body, but in doing so, saved all of his soldiers. That is, and these are true stories, this is the culture that someone is raised in when he's raised in a Jewish state. Everyone is Jewish. Everyone is your brother. Everyone you have to help out. To summarize, we mentioned 7 points of how we, as religious Jews, how can we celebrate a secular state? First of all, we saw the precedent of Hanukkah, that the Rambam celebrates the Maccabean dynasty. But how? Why? Point number one was that the state of Israel helps us battle assimilation. Point number two, it helps us battle anti-Semitism and opens the gates for any Jews in danger. Point number three, it's a mitzvah to have a Jewish state in the land of Israel. Go rush them. Number four, a Jewish state is the difference between redemption and exile. We are no longer in Churban. We are part of the redemptive process. Point number five, Galut was a terrible Chilul Hashem. The state of Israel is a Kiddush Hashem. Number six, if our goal is to be an Or LaGoyim, look in Yeshayahu, the term to be a light to the nations is always mentioned in the context of a Jewish state in the land of Israel, where we have a moral army and moral politics, and that is the atmosphere. And that is how we influence the nations. And point number seven, the Jewish state brings us to be altruistic, not to be selfish, but to be more selfless. I'll be happy to deal with comments or questions I see on chat. Let me go through the comments here.
Excellent, excellent presentation.
My pleasure.
הלוואי שכולם ככה היו מרגישים פה. I'm from Houston, Texas.
Oh.
Unfortunately, I've been just visiting here for many years, quote unquote. I know Libi Bamizrach. However, every year when I beg rabbis, with all my due respect, just to mention Yom HaShoah, Yom HaZikaron, I get a generic answer. Call Yom, we think about Yom HaShoah. And my answer is, call Yom, I remember Yetziat Mitzrayim. Why should I celebrate Pesach? And I don't know what is it that it still falls on deaf ears. And they are not Satmir. They are not Naturei Karta, they are Orthodox synagogues, and I say with all my due respect, I really don't know how else to approach. And I don't give up. I keep saying it over and over.
All I can say is good for you. I think, at least as far as I'm concerned, you're preaching to the choir here. But I respect your attempts. And I hope you got some material from this class.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it very, very much. You really enriched my knowledge and the way to approach and to hopefully, I don't give up.
Thank you very much. What is your name? I don't see you speaking.
I'm Sarah Curtis.
Ah, okay.
From Shalom, Houston,
Shalom. Thank
Texas.
You. Shalom, I see Shalom. Irene Lancaster would like to say something. Irene?
I'm from a Haredi community in Manchester, UK, and I just want to point out that the biography of Rabbi Shashav Cohen of Haifa, which I translated, has a whole passage about when Ben-Gurion announced it and they were fighting for the old city, and the Haredi Rabbonim, all of them, did a service together with Hallel for Yom HaTzmaut, when Ben-Gurion announced it's in the book, in Hebrew and in English, which you can no doubt get from the publisher Urim. And I was very honoured that I was their friend, and I translated his book when he was 80. And he was a great chief rabbi, and he would absolutely love this talk, which I totally agree with. I'm very pleased to say that our shul, which is both Haredi and Zionist, always does Yom HaTzma'ut, Yom HaZikaron, and Yom HaShoah, you know, all of them, even though it's Haredi. And it must be a unique shul with a very nice rabbi. So, you know, I think you're absolutely right. I'm sorry that our other shuls in diaspora, because I completely agree about Pesach. What is the point if this is almost more important to have the own land where, as you say, you can win the Eurovision Song Contest, you know, which sounds very, very trite, but it's like amazing. Thank you very much for your talk.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your comment. Anyone else? Maybe I'll, should I relate to the comments here? Let's see. Chodesh Tov.
I'd like to thank you. I wasn't sure I was good. I wrote to you that I first checked you out. I wasn't going to listen to such a topic from somebody living in Pitzlaritz. I'm just northwest of you in Shiloh. It's a few minutes as the crow flies.
The Shilonim. Yeah. Thank you very much.
I enjoyed it.
Here. Religious freedom by way of religious reformers, both fighting on Shabbat and taking on a dual role of religious and political leadership. Right? That's one of the issues that obviously we face in Israel today all the time is leadership. And I always tell people, especially those who are not living here, to come and become citizens and to vote. And then you'll have just as much a say as everyone. The Satmar Rav is known as their Rav, not their Rebbe. Yes, I stand corrected. Make a nation of Kohanim is in the Torah. Right. That the explanation is that we are supposed to be, what was the role of the Kohanim in the olden days? They were the teachers. And just like the Kohanim are the teachers of Israel, so to Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, are called Mamlechet Kohanim, that we are like the teachers, like we said before, the Or LaGoyim, the light to the nations. Okay, in the Rambam's time, I'm not sure he could anticipate secularism. So I'm not sure he approves or disapproves. The Rambam, yes, he did not know Spinoza and he did not know secularism, but the Rambam is relating to Hellenism. And as we saw, there were Hellenist Jews in the time of the Maccabean dynasty. And the Rambam teaches us from that precedent how to relate to a non-ideal Jewish state. Today, there are governments that want to outlaw Shechita. If a person lives in a country that wants to outlaw Shechita, so you don't have freedom of religion. I don't know. Did anybody pass that? I heard them talking. In Sweden, I know that there isn't. Does anybody know? Is there another
country? There are a whole bunch. Switzerland, I think. There's a whole bunch of countries. But I've checked. I researched it. Every single country that outlaws Shechita allows hunting, which proves that there's nothing to do with being kind to the animals. It's just anti-Semitism. And in the States, recently, one of the big universities that has a lot of Jewish students is making commencement on Shavuot, and they refuse to move it. Tough luck on the Jews. And there's not real freedom of religion. And I just checked with university student in the States who's a relative. She said that the anti-Israel in the way it's taught and everything in the United States, I don't know how Canada is increasing. She just said from just in the 4 years she's been in university.
Okay, so I just, you'll excuse me, I just want to finish relating to the questions here in short. The Mishnah Brura did not consider mandatory Palestine to constitute a Jewish state. In the Mishnah Brura's time, if he would have come to the land of Israel, he would have done Kriya. But if he were alive in 1948, he would not have done Kriya. There are secular Jews also in the state of Israel, obviously. But the secular Jews, they don't totally leave the Jewish people. They serve in the Jewish army. They all do Brit Milah. They all marry Jews. They all, almost all of them, fast on Yom Kippur. And that was what I meant when I said that assimilation in the context of a Jewish state brings those who were really acting like Gentiles when they come to Israel from the Ukraine, from Russia, from Venezuela, whatever. So they start acting more Jewish. Okay, somebody says that Rav Moshe Feinstein makes sense. Obviously, he makes sense. But for those who don't want to tear their clothing every time they go to the Kotel, you can for sure rely on the Mishnah Brura. And that is the more accepted opinion. And if you follow the Mishnah Brura, you'll sit next to him in Olam Haba. You'll have a good seat. No problem. Tada Rabba. Make sure that next time we send the source sheet. Yes. I am troubled by this line of thinking, connecting the two events, the destruction and Israel. As many have said, perhaps I believe in a Tim class, if that's the deal, better no Holocaust and no state of Israel. Of course, I agree 100%. Nobody, I think, is so stupid to say that the Holocaust is worth the state of Israel. But what did we say? We said that the Holocaust was the price of not having a Jewish state. And the facts speak for themselves. How would a Satmar Agudat Yisrael respond to you and your response to them? I don't know if we have time. I think I'm supposed to finish up. So maybe if Rabbi Kelman asks me back for another series, maybe I'll talk about the Ramban and the answer to the Ramban. Yes, my father was Sheldon Schwat. I went to YU with him. This is Pesach. Okay. Go to the Kotel on Shabbat, so there is no Kriya. Okay. In the time of Shivat Zion, the Jews went ahead and rebuilt the Beit HaMikdash without waiting for Mashiach. Mashiach never came then, so why should we wait? Okay, thank you very much for your comments. I'd like to say hello to all those people who I know. I see Debbie Sondheim. Who else? Susan Silks, I saw. Gidon Ariel, I noticed. Anybody else who I should say hello to?
Hello, Ari.
Shalom, shalom. I don't know if you ever got my regards.
I did from Gershon Distenfeld.
Nachon.
I just emailed with your mother.
Oh, yeah, you're still in touch.
Yes. You have your mother's smile and your father's eyes.
Again, my mother's smile and?
Your father's eyes.
Oh, I never heard that before, but I'll take that as a compliment.
Yes.
I know people say that that I teach like my father, but I also deal with music like my mother's family. My mother's family are Chazanim.
And so, I could definitely hear your father saying that in the car.
I put that one in for you.
Yeah, thank you. I drove many times with him in the car. I could definitely hear that.
Ah, I remember. I remember sitting with us, right? How are you? How's your health?
Baruch Hashem. Much better. Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem. I remember davening for you last. It was just last year.
Yes.
Can't leave.
Okay. So, and I was in Cleveland for Pesach.
Okay, continue privately.
Okay, continue privately. Okay, shalom to everybody, and I hope to see you next week. Bezrat Hashem.
Kol tov.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it was really enlightening, and I was in Kochav HaShachar.
Yeah. Can't disconnect. I'm disconnecting.
Okay. How do you know? Who do you know in Kochav HaShachar?
I don't know the last name, but I did visit with a group to that, and I remember that soap factory.
I can't believe it. You can't disconnect.
Oh, you're invited to come visit again?
Thank you. There is a daughter of our friends from Houston. I don't know her last name. Miriam is her first name. She's married to a guy from South America.
Slonimchik.
Yeah, it sounds like that, right.
Slonimchik,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Their He's father. Europe, right? Exactly. So I know them, Miriam, because I know her father and I know the family. He's in Houston, Texas. But I came to Kochav HaShachar with a group, but I remember and I was very impressed. You talk about being altruistic, Kochav HaShachar and the soap factory.
Did I speak to the group?
No. This was a group. I was in Israel. I took a group from Tel Aviv. For a visit, right? It was part of the time. We went to Shiloh, and then we went to Kochav HaShachar. But I was impressed with the soap. Isn't that the place where they have the soap company that employs
soap factory, right? For their kids
children,
with special needs.
Right. Special needs children, and it really made a deep impression of this community.
Oh.
So,
like I said, you know what? You're invited to live here, not just visit again. You're invited to live here. We'll be more than happy.
I know. Thank you. I really enjoyed your presentation very, very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for the positive feedback.
Kol
tov to everybody.
Kol tov.
And be well, and shalom, shalom.
Shalom, shalom. Bye-bye.